It is Palomar versus First American Bank. Mr. Curtis. Yes.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, my name is Nathan Curtis, and I represent the appellants Alejandro and Rafaela Palomar. Obedience to a Supreme Court decision is one thing. Extrapolating from its implications a holding on an issue that was not before that court is another. This is a mistake that's been made by numerous courts in interpreting Doosnip versus Tim.
And in your opinion, this was wrongly decided?
In my opinion, Your Honor, I would agree with Justice Scalia's dissent that the plain language of the decision would have led to another result. However, based on the result of the actual opinion, the court extremely limited its holding. And by limiting its holding to the facts that were before the court at that time, which were a partially secured mortgage in a Chapter 7, that is the sole type of case in which Doosnip applies.
Now, part of your argument is that similarly situated creditors should receive similar treatment. That being said, does it make sense to distinguish no value the league and one for which there is minimus value? In other words, why should these two?
Well, Your Honor, the reason that the two liens should be treated differently is because Doosnip requires that a lien that does have value for it to be attached to, in a situation in which there is even de minimis value, Doosnip says that a lien cannot be avoided. However, in a situation where there is no value, no collateral value for the lien to attach, that is not a secured claim. That is an unsecured claim. What Doosnip did was it created...
Well, maybe prices of real estate have been rising very rapidly. So how do we know that the average price of real estate in the United States rose by 10% last year? So how do we know this lien has no value?
Well, Your Honor, at the time of filing, the value of the debtor's residence was $165,000, and the balance in the first mortgage was $242,000. So certainly at that time...
So is it a case-by-case judgment you want, that someone makes a prediction and says, well, this lien is worthless, and so let's get rid of it? Is that your argument?
Well, Your Honor, at the time...
Is that your argument or not?
There certainly is a case-by-case component,
Your
Honor.
Yes or no? Is that what you that's what you want? You want a case-by-case prediction whether the lien has value?
Yes, Your Honor.
Why?
Because if 506 requires you to value each individual...
Why? A practical reason.
From a practical standpoint, Your Honor, because each individual case is different. If a case...
Come on. If the lien is... If you're really confident... ex ante, this lien will never be worth anything, then why do you want to get rid of it?
It's not a matter of whether the lien will ever be worth anything, Your Honor.
Well, if it will be worth anything, then the lienor ought to be able to keep his lien. I thought you were just considering the case where the lien is worthless.
When the lien is worthless at the time of filing, certainly, Your Honor.
It may someday have value.
Well, that's correct.
So why do you want to eliminate it?
Well, Your Honor, post-Doosnip, Congress amended the bankruptcy code.
And I want a practical reason, not all this.
Because the debtor is permitted to retain any appreciation in value.
Really?
Because that's the basis of the fresh start that is the overarching goal behind filing bankruptcy.
Fresh start, in your view, would be, well, just wipe out the creditors. Right.
That would be fresh start
really,
would be wipe out the unsecured
really
creditors.
Fresh start, right? No creditors. Okay. So now you're picking on a lienor and saying no lienors.
We're picking on a creditor.
Also, I don't understand the fresh start. If the lien is worthless, then eliminating it doesn't do anything for the debtor.
On the contrary, Your Honor, if a lien is worthless, eliminating the lien may allow a debtor to keep his house.
Wait, who's going to take it away from him?
Well, a debtor may not be able to afford to make both his first and his second mortgage payments.
Afford what?
Afford to make the payments on the mortgages, Your Honor. If a debtor can afford to make his first mortgage payment, but cannot afford to make his second mortgage payment.
But if the lien, okay, so this is a second mortgage,
yes.
The lien, a second mortgage, debtor can't make his payment. Well, won't the mortgagee refinance?
Generally, Your Honor, mortgage companies do not refinance.
They'll just foreclose? Is that
correct?
Fear?
Could I ask? I need some preliminary information. Are they presently living in the house? The debtor?
They were living in the house at this time, Your Honor, yes.
As far as we know.
As far as we know.
And there's no question that this second mortgage is a validly recorded mortgage. Is that correct?
That is correct, Your Honor.
And we don't know the existing amount. The original loan was $50,000.
Correct.
So at some point, we have to assume that this house was worth whatever the value of the two mortgages were. Is that right?
It would be nice to assume that, Your Honor, although...
Well, why would they give a second mortgage?
There's predatory lending that goes on all the time, Your Honor.
A predator wants to get some money.
that's very
He's
true.
He's not going to give a big loan if there's not at least some assumption there's going to be value.
That's also true, Your Honor. So
why can't there... resolve all of this is that the first mortgage mortgage holder can simply foreclose, and that wipes out any subsequent mortgage, and then it's clear there's not going to be any other residual obligation on that $50,000 other than whatever is attached to that land. Is that correct?
That's correct, Your Honor.
So why are we here arguing about saying it's not worth anything? What does that do for your client?
Well, because the debtors would like to keep their house, Your Honor.
Well, that's my point. They want to keep their house.
They want to keep their house, but...
Then why don't they... I know what's going on here. Why don't they make a deal with their primary mortgage holder and say, foreclose, get the title free and clear, and then you can refinance us? That's what they want to end up, I think.
Well, that's easier said than done, Your Honor.
Well, it is, but I find it too easy to just say, well, just erase that second mortgage. That's the condition of that property right now. It has
Right.
a valid second mortgage. You say, well, it isn't worth anything, so we ought to strip it off.
But there's no guarantee that if the first mortgage holder were to foreclose, that the debtors would be able to purchase the property back.
Well,
the bank could sell it to somebody else.
Yeah. That's what could happen.
About that. Look, you say the second lienor, the second mortgagee, would foreclose. No. Your whole premise is
so
that
the first
lien
mortgage
is
holder.
Worthless.
Yes.
Right? Then
That's
why
correct.
Will the why will the lienor foreclose if the mortgage is worthless?
I didn't say that the second mortgage holder would foreclose.
No, that's
foreclose.
The usual sequence. It's the second mortgagee that forecloses, right?
No, usually it's the primary mortgage.
No, it's the second mortgagee that forecloses.
No, typically, Your Honor, the primary mortgage holder forecloses because the second mortgage holder would have to pay off the first mortgage holder in order to foreclose.
Precisely. And that's why the second mortgagee forecloses. Now, if the second mortgage is worthless, of course he won't bother to foreclose, right?
Correct. If the second mortgage is worthless, there's no reason for
it. So how can you suffer if the second mortgage is worthless, if the lien is worthless, how can you possibly be hurt? No one is going to foreclose. No one is going to incur legal expenses to foreclose a mortgage which is worthless.
That's true, Your Honor, but the lien still exists.
What difference does it make if no one is... You said the second lienor was going to foreclose. Now you've withdrawn that. Do you have some other argument for how the worthless lien somehow is hurting the mortgagor?
Well, Your Honor, what it comes down to, again, is the interpretation of 506 A and D.
No, it doesn't. I'm asking you a simple question, nothing to do with 506 D. How is the owner of the house harmed by a worthless lien?
The owner of the house is harmed by the worthless lien in case the value ever does increase.
Precisely.
But
and
the bank,
and that's value for which the second mortgagee negotiated the possibility of a future increase in the value of the property.
That's correct, Your Honor.
And we're very hesitant about wiping out secured interests.
That's correct, but there is
now,
no secured interest.
If you file, you know, a secured claim in bankruptcy, and then of course you're stuck in bankruptcy. But here we're talking about just removing a lien from a lienor who'd like to keep the lien in the hope that someday the property will be worth more. And why should the borrower get that value?
Because that's what the code permits, Your Honor.
No, it doesn't. There's nothing about that in the code anywhere.
I see that I'm out of time. So
you are, but I just want to follow up here a little bit. Because what you're saying, sure, the first mortgage holder still can foreclose to its advantage. At least it gets $165,000.
Possibly, yes.
Well, that's it can bid any amount it wants up to
Correct.
Its own lien. So it can take that property and then recoup some value. Or
Correct.
Or the debtor can stay in possession if they're willing and maybe refinance. That could happen. But in that whole process, that second mortgage is thrown out because the second mortgage holder didn't come in. He's not going to. He's not going to bid in something that he's paying off the other bank. He's not going to do that. So that's how it gets wiped out, not by stripping it off here. That's what I'm confused about. There's no practical benefit here. Other than, you keep saying, well, if the property went up, then that second mortgage holder would have an advantage. That's not your argument. You don't want that, because if you admit that, then of course you're not going to strip it off.
Well, except for the fact, Your Honor, that the amendments to the Bankruptcy Code in 1994 and in 2005 gave the debtor...
I think you're misreading 506D. It's about whether there's an allowed secured claim.
Correct. And at the time that the case was filed, the claim was not secured. There was no recourse. There's no value, collateral value, for the lien to attach.
But it wasn't disallowed in the sense that the second mortgagee files a secured claim in bankruptcy, and the court says, no, you don't have a secured claim. And then the lien goes down the drain. That's what 506D is about, isn't it?
No, 506, according to Duznip, 506 A and D, when using 506 A and D, there's a two-prong test. The first test is the claim allowed, and the second test is the claim secured. And the court found that if the claim is first allowed and second secured, then 506 D could not be used to avoid the lien. In a situation such as this, where there is no value, collateral value, for the lien to attach to, it cannot be considered a secured claim.
But if there's no claim filed in bankruptcy, 506 A and D are not applicable.
Well, Your Honor...
They're about claims, right? Claims in bankruptcy. No claim. It's always possible for someone who has a secured interest to bypass bankruptcy. Now, there are disadvantages. He loses, you know, the possibility of an efficiency judgment and so on. But you can always do that. Isn't that basic? Liens pass through bankruptcy unaffected?
That is basic. As far as your question regarding the claims, Your Honor...
And you want to drive a huge harpoon into the midsection of this principle about lien, because you want to say every time someone presents evidence the lien isn't going to be worth much for a few years, then the lien goes down the drain.
There's
no judicial authority for that, and it's not in the statute.
I the plain meaning, plain,
no,
the plain reading of 506.
You need a claim for 506 A and D.
But what I'm saying,
the mortgagee doesn't have to file a claim in bankruptcy. Sit back.
I understand that, Your Honor, but a claims process is, although it's a sufficient condition, it's not a necessary condition for lien avoidance. In every Chapter 7, for example, the very process of the Chapter 7 trustee making the determination that there is or is not an estate to be administered, and thereby making a decision whether or not there should be a claims process, that is in itself a claims allowance process. When the Chapter 7 trustee files a no-asset report, he's saying that there are no assets to be administered and there are no claims that should be filed. That's the claims allowance process in a no-asset Chapter 7. So there is still a claims allowance process.
That's not what 506 A and D. Anyway, thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honor.
So, case will be taken under advisement and court will be in recess.
Thank you very much.